resonances by our guest today on Calvus and Damien.
In the house,
Ryan Garber. Who's the performer on that?
The performer's Mark Hassan. He's another colleague of mine. This is sort of another nice part about being in academia. But he's one of our piano professors here. I wrote it for him. Well, he sort of, he kind of was, he kind of was responsible for me getting sort of an award and a commission, and so I turned around and wrote the piece for him as part of that. And this has actually been released on Capstone Records. I know it's a label you're familiar with. And so it's nice to, those sort of relationships in music are nice. I think that's something that people should not overlook. That's, you know, as tough as music can be sometimes, those just really personal relationships working with other musicians are, that's to me the most special part about music.
So now on to those three compositions, the ones that you think your students must hear and the three that mattered the most to you.
Yeah, hard to pin down. You know, I know somebody who once tried to make a list of 100 desert island pieces and never finished.
Oh, but we're not asking about you. We're pinning you down. Here comes the pin. Do you feel
it?
It's pushing very hard.
Oh, yeah, I can't. And that is a big pin all the way from Vermont to Tennessee. Oh, wow. Well, let me, I don't know. Let's see. This might be slightly out of order. The pieces for my students, I guess it's almost hard to separate that from what's influenced me. I mean, you're talking about from any time period, I assume.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, so I can point to, you know, a couple of pieces that without having heard them, I would be totally different as a composer, and so because of how they affected me, they transformed me more than any other pieces. And I could tell you what they are, but I'm not gonna.
Well, you know, I think the one piece, which is almost a cliche to say, but this happens still, I think remarkably still, this long after 1913 when it came out, is The Rite of Spring. I think it happens to people always at about the same time when they're an undergraduate starting composition if they've not heard it. There's something about that piece that's still just amazingly fresh. You know, a few years ago, I figured out that it was, I think, probably 2004 or 5. I don't know exactly. There's a certain point where I realized that the distance in time between The Rite of Spring and now was exactly the same as between The Rite of Spring and Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, which, I don't know what that means, but for sure. But I think people think of The Rite of Spring as still being this, you know, cutting edge type of thing. I mean, the average person, and maybe they would for Beethoven's Ninth. I don't know. But you know, that piece people tend to get exposed to at an important time in their lives. I mean, that's part of it. Part of its timing, you know. As much as anything else, it would be a little harder now for me or for you guys probably to hear something like that wouldn't mean as much to us now because we've seen it. One other piece that I can remember exactly where I was when I heard it was Luciano Berio's O King, which of course becomes, and I'm talking about the chamber version. It becomes a movement in a sinfonietta. But that piece was, I don't know what it was exactly, but the you know, part of it is, of course, this is a piece dedicated to Martin Luther King, I think shortly after he's assassinated. And that's part of it, the power of that sort of emotion. But the way he used the human voice and used the instruments and, you know, I just kind of remember how it cadences at one point on this C, kind of C major chord. That's a great piece, and a piece, you know, I have my students listen to. So The Rite of Spring in that, and another piece, it's hard. I mean, in terms of just a general piece, I mean, I think something like the Bach B minor Mass, it has a lot of stuff in it this has a lot of notes, a lot of good things. You know, Bach a lot of times is not considered a great orchestrator, but in the Bach being a minor mass, I've been lucky enough to play it a couple times on bassoon. I mean, there's a great place in there that's written for, I think it's baritone voice, but it's accompanied by two bassoons and a horn. You know, and that's somewhat of a non-traditional accompaniment. And Bach does, of course, you know, instruments are a little different then. But there's just so much in that piece. If you had to have three pieces, there's so much that you could use in there in terms of how, you know, we still teach theory and counterpoint. You could use that for so many things. So, you know, for that alone. You know, but there are other things. I mean, I think, you know, 4 minutes and 33 seconds, I mean, it's another thing. It almost becomes a stock answer, but I don't think students, the first time they're exposed to that, they think it's a joke. But, you know, the older you get, I think the more you look at it and say, wait a minute, there's actually something so profound to this. It almost takes a lifetime to sort this out. You know, so, oh gosh, I don't know. So if you had the Bach B minor mass and, you know, and the Stravinsky and the Berio, I guess, maybe, for students, well, it'd be a good mix.
All right. Since you brought up the Bach B minor mass, we have a composition of yours. And that's the Magnificat, and it's in three sections. Tell me a little bit about that piece, and also because you're teaching that's a Baptist college, is that right?
It is affiliated with the Baptist in Tennessee.
Yeah. So tell me about the sort of the cross influences, how this piece came to be, also how it came to be performed. But let's talk about how it came to be.
Well. I remember exactly what happened. I was at a football game at the school, and I was sitting next to the choir director here, Eric Thorson, and I just basically said, or he said to me, can I write a piece or something like this for you? And that's sort of how it started. And I mean, I've been very fortunate here to have colleagues who've been supportive in that way. You know, I've always wanted to set a Magnificat. Not sure why, other than the fact, you know, I like Bach's Magnificat, and I like Latin. I like that language.
Yeah. Oh, Baptists are really fond of Latin. We knew that.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Of course. I'm. I'm actually like at an Episcopal church now, but you don't tell anybody that.
Oh, you say that very quietly.
Yes. So anyway,
all right,
it's okay.
Well, yeah,
I'm not.
Go ahead.
I'm actually, the college here is it has that affiliation.
It offers a Christian liberal arts education in an environment that encourages open intellectual inquiry and deeper spiritual maturity. Students receive a personalized education in small classes. Caring faculty and staff mentors get to know and nurture each student. We seek to instill Christian virtues in our students and inspire them to use their unique gifts for a lifetime of service. End quote.
Calvos and Damien's homework for last night.
Yeah, well, very good. Well, that's what it says. Well, you know, in a nutshell, not casting judgment on anyone here. You know, between Princeton, a historically Presbyterian school, and a place like Bob Jones or Liberty, we would be, you know, probably somewhere in the middle. Not very, you know, which of course there's a lot of middle in there. But we're not real close to either of those ends, if you know what I mean. This is a good piece to do here. And we always do every Christmas, a little before Christmas, always do like an oratorio. Every other year, it's the Messiah. Thank God it's not every year. And I think it once was. I've heard the Messiah too many times. I don't need to hear it again. But, in fact, this year we're doing the Bach Magnificat. But we had a perfect place to do this. We always hire an orchestra to come in the choir. So it just worked out nicely, and you know, so I had that opportunity. And when you have a chance to write for choir and orchestra and soloist, you take it.
Oh yeah.
And I've been very fortunate with that, with my orchestra things. I have been. You know, the Bach splits up the Magnificat. I want to say the verses into like 12 or 13 sections. I can't remember off the top of my head. I want to say 13, but then I'm wondering if 13 would have been a good choice. But I didn't. I split it up into three sections. Mine's maybe a little shorter than his in terms of time, but I had to write. You know, one of the choices a composer always has is: do you write in a way that's going to make the performers, be able to perform well, or do you just write whatever the heck you want and they'll have to deal with it? And you know, I mean, I know in this and on these other orchestra pieces, I mean, I say, well, it would be nice to do this and this and this, but they might just throw it back at me. You know, what do you do? And, I'm not at the point as a composer. I mean, some composers, if at a certain point in your career, you can maybe do that. But, if you're getting something done on someone's good graces, then you have to take that into consideration. So it's not, terribly difficult, but it's also not necessarily super easy. So there's a lot of devising the vocal parts and stuff.
Is it scored for full orchestra or chamber orchestra?
It's for full orchestra. Now, it was not done with 30 violins, it's done. It's for full orchestra. Well, I guess it depends on what you mean by full orchestra. It doesn't have three of any of the winds, so I guess I had to keep that pared down a little bit to pairs of winds, even pairs of horns, and that sort of thing. A few percussionists. So I guess it's not a full Mahler orchestra. It's more of a full Brahms orchestra without a contrabassoon, you might say, just a couple horns. So,
Let's hear it. This is the work of our guest today on Calvus and Damien
in the house,
Ryan Garber. This is his Magnificat.
Thank you.
Magnificat, music by Ryan Garber. Very almost traditional shape. Is that pushed ahead by the text? Is that how you end up with that kind of a shape? Or is it something that is just sort of your sensibility?
Oh, yeah, both, I guess. The text and also, you know, the situation. I mean, I'm writing this for, you know, this annual event, and it was a lot of people there, and, you know, it's... You know, if you look throughout the history of music, composers tend to, when they're doing large ensemble pieces for orchestra, choir, that's where they tend to be the most conservative. You know, you're filling a big hall, selling tickets. In this case, it was not selling tickets, but whereas, you know, when you're writing string quartets or something like this, and you don't have to fill as big of a hall or have the forces involved. I mean, it's just very simple, kind of practical matters. You can be more experimental. I mean, you can see that in Beethoven. I mean, his string quartets are more experimental, I think, than his symphonies. And probably most people would agree to that. Or his piano sonatas. So I think part of that just by nature. And another thing, too, you have such limited rehearsal time with an orchestra that you have to make it so they can pretty much sight read the thing. I could have written anything I wanted, but who knows what I would have gotten. So a lot of that's just driven by the circumstances. And, you know, as a composer, you have to decide what to do. Now, we'd started with parabolisms. Now, see, there's an absolutely the opposite situation. That's a piece where I knew I could write really whatever I darn well pleased. And, you know, and I did. You know, in fact, my colleague said, he said, you write it and I'll figure out a way to play it. So, and that's a great thing to have. But, you know, it's not always that way. But you know, I'm happy with both pieces. They both sort of have their own. Their own merits. You know, the Magnificat starts out with a C major chord and the cellos. It's low. I tell my students a lot, you know, because they're usually, you know, typically resistant to dissonances, you know, when they're just starting out and things like that, when they haven't heard them. I'll tell them, you know, I'll go to the piano and I'll play a C major chord, the lowest C major chord on the piano. I say, you know, Mozart would not have written this. So it's not, you know, there are so many.
Well, of course, his piano didn't go that low. So.
Well, exactly. Yeah, I do. I tell them that. But I said, you know, I can play this, and you know, he didn't. Or you can play it up high. So, you know, there's so much. We tend to think of things, you know, as 20th century music or whatever, contemporary music dissonance. But there's so many other things, and rhythm and chords. So, you know, in a piece like that, I tried. You know, I have a place in there where there's an alto solo that's accompanied by a couple bassoons, and it's sort of, in a way, a reference to that Bach B minor Mass. But, you know, so, you know, you just, you know, that's the kind of thing you can do. And there are lots of things, but, you know, at the end of the day, you have to write what you feel like writing, and... I think the key is for me, and as a teacher, and as a composer, is there is a craft there, you know, and you can work at it or you can be lazy at it. You know, you can have a great idea and not work at it. I mean, it's there is some work involved, no matter the style or anything like that.
So let's go from large to small. We cross paths, I think, on a project called 60 by 60.
Yes.
All three of us, as a matter of fact, have had work in the 60 by 60 programs. And for our listeners, this is a project of creating 1 hour-long concerts consisting of 60 compositions by 60 composers, 60 seconds each. And
no, longer than 60 seconds.
Wouldn't that be nice? Oh, no, longer sure. than 60 seconds,
yes.
Right. And Rob Voisey, who's the creator of this project, has also done recently dance and video as well, along with these 60-second pieces. And so how did you get involved with this? Did you respond to the call? And tell us about this piece of music you wrote for 60 by 60.
Yeah, I responded to the call, like I guess most other folks did. Yeah, and I mean, what Robert did was great. I've actually never met him, but I'm very grateful for what he's done. It's a great idea. It's been a great thing that he's done. I got this. My experience with electronic music has been, well, I sort of, everywhere I went to school, it seemed like right as I was arriving, the electronic music studio was sort of going into hibernation or something. So I unfortunately never got, I got some experience, but, you know, in things kind of were, and you know, I didn't, it was never going to be my main focus. Although there's a part of me that always says, you know, there's one day I'm going to go into this. You know, I think there's going to be a period of my life where I go and do a lot more of this, because you know there are you know fewer limitations, obviously, in some ways there are no limitations, but so I saw this and I thought, yeah, what can I do? And that composition, I'm almost embarrassed to say how I wrote it, but I, with very limited means, I just had this crazy idea, and I went into Finale, which is just, you know, a music notation program. The sounds are better, and I just went in, and I basically, the sounds you hear are just Finale sounds on the timpani, and then I did some things, added a few little effects to them. But I think the concept was that, you know, one of the things is that you're hearing virtual timpani. You're hearing things that a timpani can't really do. A timpani can't really play 10, 12, 15 notes at once way up high. And that's what's one of the reasons you do electronic music, is to do things you can't do otherwise. It's interesting. I mean, this is very different than these other pieces I've written. But I'm very happy with it. I'm very happy with the results. I mean, I almost feel a little. I've always felt a little weird because it's sort of this thing. I just, oh, let's try this and see what happens. And you know, I didn't use any great software or you know to do it per se. But you know, it worked. So that's it. There's not much else to it.
We're going to hear that in just a second. Tell us quickly, we've only got a couple of minutes left, what your future plans are as a composer.
You know, I've had a good relationship with some saxophonists, my colleague here, and then that's branched out in some other things. So there's some more things there. Something big that's I almost hesitate to say, is it's not 100% set in stone, but I think it's going to work out is a piece I'm going to write for a choir in the Ukraine that's going to be conducted by a German conductor, someone I know pretty well over there. And I'm going to try to have it make use of several languages, English, German, and Russian, probably also Latin and Greek. And, I'm trying to have a, you know, sort of a universal type of thing to it. That's probably all I can say about it right now. And then, there are lots of little things always in the works. That's the big thing I've been working on. And, you know, otherwise, you know, the one thing about academia in the school year, you have starts and ends to things, so it's always sort of, you're always sort of experiencing new starts. So I think that helps in some ways, seeing that cycle around. This has been fun. I'm very glad you've had me on here.
Well, Ryan Garber, thanks very much for joining us on Calvos and Damien
in the House.
And we're going to hear Kettle Music by Ryan Garber.